This is Todd Steed. You are listening to Improvisations. Dweezil Zappa is coming to the Bijou Theater on Tuesday, January the 17th at 8 p.m. and conducting a masterclass in guitar that afternoon at 3, also at the Bijou Theater. He is our guest on this evening's Improvisations. Dweezil, thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Do you have any specific memories of Knoxville, or is it just another tuna sandwich of a town on your route? What do you got for us?
Well, actually, I do recall the Bijou Theater because we played there a few times, and I've had a couple of good experiences right there in that town. Walking around, there's a public square not far from the theater that had some nice restaurants and things, and I thought it was a really nice town. And I've also done master classes there before, and the people that came were really good. And there was a guy that brought me effects pedals that he made in his garage and stuff. So, you know, Knoxville's been a good place to visit for me.
Well, let's talk about that master class, because that's a fascinating concept. So as I understand it, people can come and take basically a lesson with you where you talk about guitar and demonstrate things. What kind of student would be ideal for this type of class, and how do you teach people at several different levels of ability?
That's a good question. Well, anybody's welcome, and a lot of times the people that show up are at a beginner level, and I actually really like that because everybody, when they become interested in learning the guitar, they get inspired because there's something about it that gets them excited, and they just get this sound in their head and they think to themselves, oh, I want to do that. You know, so anybody that's ever played guitar can relate to that. And one of the things that I like to show, especially to people that are just starting out, is that there is a way to be able to look at the neck that will be very helpful in visualizing the entire neck that's different than what is taught in a traditional class setting. And so I have a course that I've done on a website called truefire.com that's called Fretboard Freedom. And a lot of the things that I teach in that course, I share in this masterclass, because essentially what it does is it gives you a way to look at the guitar as three sets of two strings. And when you see the guitar this way, it simplifies it drastically, because on the guitar, there's only a few shapes that you can make with your fingers, and they all sort of connect into scale patterns. And I break it down to show some simple things, especially when it comes to pentatonics, which is the majority of what people hear in the blues and traditional sort of rock guitar playing. People always want to know, how do you do the pentatonic stuff? So there's only five shapes in that. And if you learn them on one set of two strings, you've basically learned them on all the sets of two strings, because the shapes are identical. They're just divided by the octaves. So you have three octaves of the same shape. So it sounds very complicated when I explain it that way, but if you had a visual to go with it, you would see how simplified it is. And when people see it that way, it automatically opens up the door and they start playing way easier than they ever did before.
Well, speaking of guitars and your champion nature about guitars, you oversaw the production of the Gibson Roxy SG, the one modeled after Frank's guitar back in the, early 70s.
Right.
How are you feeling about that guitar, how that thing turned out? And I noticed you use one on stage. And also, have you modified yours in any way since the original production?
I do use it on stage all the time. I use a stock one, and then I also do have a modified one. And the modified one has a couple of things that are pretty useful. It has a piezo pickup, so it gives me the ability to create an acoustic kind of a sound out of an electric guitar. And then it also has something called a sustainiac, which gives me the ability to have sustained notes in any way that I want them, on the neck at any time, and hold the length for as long as I need them. It's like having an ebow on any string.
And did all those guitars sell out? Are they all gone now? You know, how did they do?
They did sell the initial run. I think they only made 450 of them, and I believe they all sold. But occasionally you'll see one come up on eBay or somewhere. I think it turned out great. It's pretty exacting in terms of the actual dimensions of the neck and the pickups and all that kind of stuff.
You've got a pretty cracking band, I've got to say. I've seen you guys several times, actually. What is the process for finding these musicians, and how do you conduct the actual auditions?
That's a good question. I think the curiosity that people have about that is the same. When I used to see my dad play, I used to think, wow, this is almost like a magic trick. How are they playing this really hard music and making it look easy? And obviously that comes down to the rehearsal and how well people know the material. But when I want to find musicians to be in the band, I go ahead and I set up difficult auditions that make it so that the music that they're playing is so complicated for the audition that it weeds out anybody that would have any kind of a delusional idea of what it's like to be in the band. So I purposely make it as difficult as possible. And then it also gives you some insight into the kind of dedication that the person might have as a musician, and then their actual personality as an individual, you know, because almost more important than the ability to play the music is the ability to be around other people in close quarters on a bus or something like that.
Right. And bless you, whoever sneezed in the background.
It's my wife sneezing in the background.
She'll feel better soon.
Yeah.
What's the most difficult piece of music you've worked up with this band? And I'm going to make this a two-part question, especially the first one in terms of how much time it took you to get it right. And also, what's the most emotionally difficult piece for you to play?
The second part of your question, the emotionally difficult piece, would be Watermelon and Easter Hay. That one, the melody to it is really tied to a lot of memories for me about my dad, and also just the way the melody works, the way the placement of certain notes when they hit at the right time, it just evokes such a strong emotional pull, and it's a very melancholy and beautiful melody. So that one for sure. But as far as like technical difficulties, there's several that we've played over the years that are very complicated and difficult to play on the guitar, some of which were never meant to be played on guitar. So for example, even the song Inca Roads, that one has some very hard parts within it. The whole song itself is complex, but there are some interludes in it that are very hard to play, particularly on guitar. But in terms of just sheer terror of trying to play something, another song called Mogio comes to mind. That one is really, really hard on every instrument. Sinister Footwear is also a very, very difficult one. A lot of polyrhythms and tricky entrances and stuff. But G-Spot Tornado, that would be on the list as well. There's a lot of hard stuff that we've played over the years, but it's never been the case that we've set out to learn something and then found it to be unplayable by the band, which is quite the badge of honor. There are a couple of things on our list of extremely difficult things to play that we would like to tackle. There's a piece called Ship Arriving Too Late to Save a Drowning Witch. And on the record, that performance that you hear on that record is multiple edits from multiple takes from different years because Frank couldn't get the band to play it correctly all the way through in the studio or on stage. So the parts that were played correctly, he edited together. And, you know, that's how hard that piece of music is.
You know, I'm glad that you mentioned Inca Roads, and this brings me to a question about your actual guitar playing. I've seen over the years many of, I guess, what you would call Zappa tribute bands, or, you know, bands with former alumni and things. And I've always felt the weak spot, if I could say that, in a lot of those bands was the guitar player, not because they didn't have great guitar players. They all had them. But I never felt that they really channeled Frank's guitar playing really effectively, or they didn't try at all in some cases. But when I see you play, I feel not only do you channel sort of what he's doing, but it doesn't sound like him. Does that make any sense? And is there a reason for that?
Yeah, I get what you're saying, and I appreciate what you're saying, because for me, one of the things I love about my dad's music the most is his guitar playing, and the way that he plays is so different than a standard rock guitarist, you know, because his thought process was that he was spontaneously composing, and he had this vocabulary as a composer rhythmically and harmonically that allowed him to do things that other guitar players would not even consider, because it's just most guitar players come from a lick based mentality where they have pre-composed licks that they know and they just string them together. And my dad played completely extemporaneously within that vocabulary that I told you. You know, he had a lot of rhythmic variation, and the harmonic concepts were deep. So when I hear guitar players play more in a traditional way over the music, it takes a total left turn for me that takes me out of the whole feeling of the music. You know, they might be playing well as a guitar player, but they're not playing in a style that evokes the overall feeling that I get from my dad's music. So I try really hard to take what I know of my dad's tendencies as a guitar player, and I've developed a way to, for lack of a better term, speak the same language, and I have a vocabulary that I continue to build on that is organized around his tendencies harmonically and rhythmically, so that I can play stuff that literally is note for note from some of his solos. But then I just use those as guideposts and fill in the blanks with other ideas that are based around his tendencies, but it's all filtered through my own style of playing. So that's where you get that combination of something that feels like it is part of the song and part of the style, but it's a new presentation because there's parts of my own personality and ideas that are flowing through that.
Do you find with you and your bandmates, after playing this very unique, flavorful, specialized music night after night, it actually changes each of you as musicians, the way you play music?
Well, for sure, it changes you as a musician, because it brings an awareness to a lot of other styles and details within the execution of performance of things, you know. So to play Frank's music, you have to be aware of many different accompaniment styles, and you have to be able to play authentically within those styles, you know. So you're going to have the opportunity to play anything from country to gospel to jazz to you know, metal to whatever. It all sort of comes into play, but it all has to have the right feeling to really pull it off. And so because of that, you have this this filter of looking at everything in fine detail, and then of course there's also a sense of humor to how some of the stuff gets organized and put together and arranged. So you know, there's pieces of my dad's music that just by virtue of the way he's put the notes together, you'll laugh because you know that he was laughing at the preposterous nature of what it sounded like to put it together that way. So there's stuff like, even for example, a song like Holiday in Berlin, Full Blown, there's a melody that's played on the saxophone that is completely out of tune and sounds horrible on purpose. But when you hear it, it's just genius, especially if you imagine that that is really the soundtrack to going on a holiday in Berlin in 1966 or 67, you know?
Yeah.
So it's that kind of stuff does filter in, but for sure, I mean, the personality of the music is something that we become accustomed to, and we are, you know, changed by how it what's needed to play that music.
And I guess the same would go for the lyrics. I mean, the lyrics can go from really abstract to some very pointed satirical things to some just crazy humorous stuff. Have you ever had any band members that just said, I can't sing that, you know, or I won't sing that? Have you had anything like that ever?
No, we actually haven't had that happen, but it's funny because we have a new girl in the band, you know, we have two girls in the band at the moment. Sheila Gonzalez has been there since the beginning, since 2006. And we have a new girl named Sean Coey. There's definitely some lyrics in some of the stuff that we've been doing from the 200 Motels era that has some crazy lyrics. For example, I'm not even sure you'd be able to put it on the radio, but you'll bleep it if need be. There's a line that says, she shoots a deodorant spray up.
This is the Southern Scrutinizer. This portion of the interview has been edited for your morality and safety. We now continue with the interview with Dweezil Zappa.
And so that particular phrase is just funny to see performed by Sean as she's dancing around and really delivering the line with a smile on her face, you know, but you can see that there might be other women who wouldn't appreciate that line.
Yeah, people I've noticed at your shows, they love to yell out stuff from the audience, a lot of inside jokes that they're yelling or whatever. Is there anything someone's yelled from the audience that just really cracked you up that you didn't expect?
I mean, there's times when people have said funny stuff, but there's one guy that has traveled around and shows up at different shows, and he makes a sound that sounds exactly like an air horn. And so whenever we hear that, we know that guy's in the audience, you know? And so it's like, oh, air horn guy's here. And so he'll come to multiple shows and you just always know it's that guy. And I've brought him up on stage to make that sound.
Well, you know, if the Zappa Family Trust is listening, he had better go ahead and trademark that name as soon as he can. Which would bring to my next question, and it's been well covered in other places, the ongoing legal issues with the Zappa Family Trust. I'm wondering where that's at now and what might be going on with your Others of Intention project.
Well, thanks for bringing that up. I'm actually launching the actual campaign, Dweezil Zappa and the Others of Intention, on pledgemusic.com. And it will have all of the information about what's going on. But for people that don't know, just really briefly, I used to have a band called Zappa Plays Zappa. And then I got a cease and desist letter from Amit and Diva, who now run the Zappa Family Trust, after my mom died. They wanted to take 100% of the merchandise in exchange for a $1 a licensing fee to use the name. And I said, no, I'm not giving you 100% of the merchandise for a $1 licensing fee to use the name Zappa Plays Zappa. So they sent a cease and desist letter saying, you can't use the name, you can't use any images of Frank, you can't even say his name or anything like that. So, which was preposterous. So I said, fine, I'll change the name. I changed the name to Dweezil Zappa Plays the Music of Frank Zappa, which I had every legal right to do. But I got another cease and desist letter that had bogus information demanding that I not use the name Frank Zappa in any way because they own the name Frank Zappa. But if I was a mechanic, for example, and I fixed Volkswagen, I could have a Volkswagen logo on my garage because that's a fair use saying, yes, I fix these automobiles. I'm saying I play the music of Frank Zappa. I can do that legally. But they still sent this cease and desist letter. And rather than keep playing this game and keep spending money on lawyers, I just changed the name to Dweezil Zappa Plays Whatever the Bleep He Wants. And then I called it the cease and desist tour. But they took it a step further by now trying to actually have a trademark, a federal trademark for the name Zappa on its own, so they could prevent me from using Zappa as my last name or to identify myself on stage, you know, effectively making me only be Dweezil. So, of course, I have to oppose this, and I've enlisted the help of the public for the legal proceedings, because it's a stupid amount of money to fight this, and it's just a dumb thing to have to endure anyway. It's such an injustice, considering I had the name before Amit Diva anyway.
Right.
So I'm starting this campaign, Dweezil Zappa and the Others of Intention, and there's lots of music that people can get. There's T-shirts, there's guitars for sale, there's other things that I've basically had to put up for sale in order to fight this name issue. And I feel confident that with support from people, we'll be able to prevail in this. But it's ridiculous that that I would even have to fight for the use of my own name. Especially when Diva Zappa is out there making items, like she's got pants, yoga pants with Frank's face on them, and she's using his name to promote all of this stuff. So why is she allowed to do it and I'm not?
And what's the website again for the for that pledge?
It's pledgemusic.com, and then I think / Dweezil, you get right to it. But you should be able to go on pledgemusic.com and just do a search of my name if you can't find it, and it'll take you right there.
I always love that photo of you circulating around in your little league outfit. It's quite awesome. I'm kind of curious, did your dad ever come watch you play little league baseball, and what was that like?
He did go to two games. You know, he was not much of a sports person growing up. I can remember the only sports that he said he ever really played, or the actual only sport he really ever played as a kid, was badminton. So he liked to watch the baseball games when he was able to come to them. I actually pitched a no-hitter once, and he was at that game. So that was cool to be able to do. And then we used to have a ping pong table at the house, and we played a little ping pong together. So that's about the extent of sporting for my dad.
Well, I did want to mention, I did interview him in 1984. It was my first telephone interview, and it was just an incredible experience.
Oh, and cool. Do you still have a tape of it?
Someone erased it like a week after I did it. I've got a but I did get a transcript. I actually wrote it all down in the case that some college DJ would erase it. But no, he was incredibly wonderful, as you have been incredibly wonderful. And it's been yet another treat getting to interview.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. All right, Dweezil Zappa, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with us here on Improvisations.
Thank you. Hopefully we'll see you at the show.
Dweezil Zappa will be playing Whatever He Wants at the Bijou Theater on Tuesday, January the 17th, beginning at 8 p.m., and conducting a masterclass in guitar the very same day, January the 17th, at 3 p.m. at the Bijou Theater as well. I'm Todd Steed. Thanks for listening.